Hello and welcome to another edition of the Legal Geeks. I'm Jessica Meterson, here as always with my co-founder and partner in geekdom, Josh Gilliland. Hey Josh, how are you?
I'm feeling snappy, Jessica.
Nice. And in case you can't tell from the timing and from that reference, we are here to discuss Avengers Endgame. So I'm going to start off right up top with a spoiler warning. We let you get through opening weekend, but now we're going to talk about it. You don't need to listen if you don't want to, but we are going to discuss the entire movie. So this is your spoiler warning. You have assumed the risk. No claims can be filed against us. Thank you very much. Here we go, talking the end of an era. Holy cow, Josh, what do you think?
It's an exceptional film. It was worth every second of it. The reports about it feeling very satisfying were accurate. I wouldn't do plot hole analysis because of the paradoxes they create, but that's another thing to discuss. But it was a fun ride, and it, very different feel than Infinity War. And you know, those who do the psychology podcasts can have a field day with this as well, because there's a lot there to discuss.
Yeah, I have to say definitely a lot of fan service, definitely a lot of great applause moments, and then obvious tearjerker moments. I would say this was much more emotional than Infinity War and the end of Infinity War. It was a ton of fun. Definitely did not seem like 3 hours. Me and the kids, we all made it through without issues. So that was good. So there were a couple kind of pandering or disappointing moments. Were some questions a little bit with the plot, but overall, I did love it. I plan to go back because, you know, between the kids asking me questions or people laughing in the audience, there were definitely some lines I missed that I'd like to hear. And also, again, kind of watch it, make sure I'm like, oh, so that's what they were doing there, and figure it out. It also, of course, makes me want to go back and watch at least the original Avengers again, just because of the time they spent and some of the interactions there. So we will talk about a few legal issues, but before we do that, we just have to do our own fan service. We've just got to talk about some of our highlights and lowlights of this fantastic movie, which again, when I say marks the end of an era, it does. You know, the Marvel universe will go on. There's all kinds of neat characters. I cannot wait for another Black Panther movie, Captain Marvel, some of the other stuff. But for the original Avengers, some of them, I think, are done for good, and kind of this sort of, like this year with Star Wars, actually, it is sort of the end of this book of Marvel stories. There'll be lots of spinoffs, but this was, I think, the end of these. So Josh, what were some of your highlights?
God, where to begin? So this final confrontation with Thanos at the beginning of the film, so the post, again, time travel makes this a little weird, but confronting him on the farm, you can see working together is a better way to take him on. Mm-hmm. And everyone working together, they didn't mess around. And Thor, you know, cut off his arm, with zero hesitation. And that was like, whoa, they are not happy and playing to win. I enjoyed that. And when Thanos gave his talk about I am destiny and all of that, I did support the beheading, but I do have some feelings to get into that as well.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. I was like, whoa.
I equate it to killing Bin Laden. It's like, okay, yeah, we can all live with that. I would have preferred a trial.
Right. But it's not when you're going to get really worked up about.
I can still sleep at night.
Yeah.
So it's like, it would have been better, but the trial might have been really complicated given the entire universe is decimated.
Yes.
And the Slobodan Milosevic war crimes trial took forever and had problems and highlighted. It's like, okay, we're not doing this right. And that's an entirely separate reason on why that drug its heels for so long. But I don't think anyone would disagree with Thor for what he did.
No.
But that's a shocking way to begin the movie, because it's like, okay, now what happens? And
yeah, where do you go from here?
Recovery, survival, and people with survivor's guilt. And that's part the psychology that, you know, folks like Janina Scarlett and, you know, Andrea Letamendi could get into with, you know, what happens to society when half the population disappears. And it's not proportional. But anyway, let's save that for a little bit later. I did the final fight was fantastic. And being, you know, the longtime comic reader that I am, you know, from when Steve Rogers as just the captain, and this was after he wasn't Captain America, which is an entirely different and complicated storyline that's not to get into.
Yes, no.
Because the, was it, he was wearing a black costume, had a different shield, and it was like Super Patriot had been Captain America. And it's a different, it's a complicated story. Let's not go there. However, Steve Rogers was able to pick up Mjolnir and kick some ass. And that was one of the big fan service moments of people just losing their minds, cheering. And I have to say, the fight of Cap with the hammer and shield taking Thanos on one-on-one was my personal highlight. That just beautiful scene.
And I knew that. I mean, we loved it. The whole audience went nuts at that scene, and it was awesome. But even as I'm like, this is awesome, I'm also like, this is Josh's like personal dream. This is like tailor-made for Josh. So yeah, that was a fantastic moment.
It's like they know fans and want to make them happy. Who knew that would happen? So just fun. And I mean, that big fight at the end, everyone had a moment, and that was cool. And for those who, you know, were the fan of, you know, fans of A-Force and want to see, you know, the female, you know, Avengers team, you know, you get a little sneak peek of that with all the female superheroes, you know, helping Captain Marvel with a charge to the van with the gauntlet. That was fun.
Yeah, see, to me, that moment, there was applause in the audience. I applauded kind of for my daughter, too. And it was nice, but it was also kind of a pandering sort of, it stuck in my craw a little bit, because it's also like, here, little ladies, we'll give you one moment where you get to have all these like secondary and tertiary characters. And then Captain Marvel, who just a few months ago finally got, you know, a standalone female hero movie. So it was kind of nice, but it was also like, so like, ooh, because I'm like, first of all, it's Captain Marvel. You don't need to have her back. She'll be fine. But, you know, it's also, it was just a little bit pandering. It actually ties to my other low light, of course, about, I mean, you know, they're getting better, but obviously with these original Avengers, one of the problem has been representation, both by people of color, which Black Panther is a great step in correcting that. And then obviously with women too, which goes to my other low light. But it was one of those that I had very mixed emotions on. It was kind of neat to see, but it was also a little bit of like, oh, this also really gets me. It kind of annoys me.
I see where you're coming from. I think there would have been more outrage if they didn't do anything.
I don't know.
It's like, oh, look, we have all these characters together. And to not take the opportunity to have that group shot. So I feel a little differently about it.
Yeah. Maybe they could have done it in a different way that didn't seem so condescending.
Sorry you felt it was condescending.
Yeah, and I'm actually not the only one. Actually, I've been listening to some spoiler podcasts since then. And actually, and it's not just women. Even the guy actually talked about, he said it seemed very 90s girl power, like the sort of stuff we got in the 90s, a little throwaway. Like, here, little ladies, here's a moment for you. Now we're going to go back to the men doing everything. And so it is something. And it also ties, of course, to the, well, I won't get into it. I will say everything else I love, but there was that moment and one other moment that did actually bother me. And it does have to do with the representation issues when it comes to women that is particularly bothersome. So,
and what's that?
The other thing with Scarlet Witch. I say Scarlet Witch because her name is Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow. On the one hand, I loved actually that she got to sacrifice herself in the big death, and that was awesome. On the other hand, it was also really annoying that basically the, you know, she was then gone. The one female original Avenger is gone. I don't even know where it was in the movie, but it seems pretty early in the movie. And then she gets like, you know, this moment where they're all like looking off into the water where they're upset, and then it's done. And then Tony Stark gets this huge funeral at the end. And I'm like, so could that not have been a funeral for like both of them maybe or something? But it's like, no, we'll give her a brief moment of reflection. But then Tony Stark, and I get it because Iron Man started everything, and there's a lot of homage to Iron Man starting everything, even with that tiny little post-credits sound scene kind of thing. So I did feel, again, and in fact, Vanity Fair has a great article on this that I will be posting tomorrow because I want to wait until opening weekend, but about how, you know, and again, it is also reflective of kind of how she has been given the short shrift throughout the past 11 years, really, in the Avengers universe. So always kind of secondary supporting character. So that is, plus again, I have beefs with Hawkeye in large part because I have beefs with Jeremy Renner, but you know, I'm like, so he gets to come back and have a bigger scene here in the final thing, like, you know, so that's all. So that was also the other annoying part. So again, from that perspective, it was a little bit annoying. So hopefully in the next decade, they will do a lot better when it comes to representation of women than they did in the first decade, because they really did fall very short there.
Well, okay. One thing that I, you know, not defending Hawkeye, but he wasn't even in the last movie.
I know, thank God. He really doesn't need to be, but that is true. He was not in the last one.
He was not in the last one, so giving him screen time, and Black Widow did have screen time in the last movie, unlike him. Now, the death, I did have mixed feelings on it. On one level, they were really close friends. The fact that Hawkeye names one of his children after her highlights, you know, the close friendship. So it does make sense. It's both of them. I did enjoy them basically competing with, no, I'm sacrificing myself.
Agreed. That was very cool.
And like Hawkeye took the jump first, and you know, from this is the practical side of why, you know, the single person might be more willing to go, no, you got a family that we're literally trying to resurrect. I'm not letting you, you know, take the hit on this one. And then we deal with you being, you know, mopey for the rest of your life. So I see why she would want to sacrifice herself for her friend to make sure that, you know, the entire goal was to resurrect half the universe. So she was radically important in that. And I do feel that they referenced her a bunch, and with even Banner talking about he tried bringing her back with his snap.
Yes.
So it's not like she was forgotten.
No, but she's out of it. And there's like a couple mentions and that's it.
But the point about the funeral's well taken. Now, part of the reason with Stark getting the send-off is his death was public and yes, and can be attributed to, oh, we're all literally alive because of you.
But they're also literally alive because of her.
It's a team effort, but I think the public nature of it would play a factor into that.
Maybe. Or again, we're elevating the man's death and sacrifice over the woman's. I mean, and again, because you can't just look at it in the context of this. And that's the problem. They have to own the past 11 years. And so, and they have given her the short shrift in all of the movies. She's always like supporting someone else, or there's the, ooh, a flirtatious love interest. Then, I mean, the family reference too. And I agree. I would totally sacrifice myself for somebody else if they had the small family. I get that. But you also have to even look at that in the context of Joss Whedon, who I used to really like and now have much more mixed feelings about. But his whole decision to give her the backstory in, is that Age of Ultron or Civil War?
Age of Ultron.
She finds out she's sterilized and then she calls herself a monster. And you're like, what the frack? And there was a lot of blowback on that too. So there's also that context. So, you know, if they get to make all these billions because all these other movies, they have to own it, and they should have been a little bit more mindful of that. Now, that being said, I didn't want to spend a ton of time on the negative. It was just that those were really the two little things that got me. On the flip side, I freaking love Scarlet Witch and her fight scene with Thanos, right? Like, I thought that was awesome, and I thought that was very well done. So they did a really good job with that. I was very happy with that. the Captain Marvel stuff in here was a little bit odd, I thought. Like how they kind of have her come in and go, because I can't actually have her around all the time because we wouldn't need all this other stuff. So I think they kind of struggled with how to incorporate her and her super duper powers into this, you know?
And the directors actually commented about that in an interview with, she's way overpowered.
Right.
And how do you handle that? And so having, it's a big universe and all these planets are in chaos and she's running around playing protector of the universe. Okay, that's one way to deal with it. But that, does that mean that, you know, you have villains who are just, you know, next level dangerous that nobody else can contend with? It makes storytelling difficult.
Yes.
because she's, the way that they set her up was being too over the top. Mm-hmm. And that's,
well, it's a Superman problem too, right? Like you have to, when you have the Justice League, it's kind of like Superman has to be off doing something else. So that the rest of the Justice League can do it. They're like, otherwise, if Superman were here, you'd be like, we could just sit back and like have mochas and watch Superman clean this up.
Wow, he's done already. Well, I guess we'll take care of the paperwork, Kal-El.
Yes.
It's like, so again, complex character. And I know they're not going to do the heavy things that they did in the comics, such as alcoholism. And oh, yeah. So in the comics, you know, Tony was an alcoholic. So the entire demon in a bottle storyline was huge. And that's when Rhodey became Iron Man. And when Carol goes through it, Tony's her sponsor. And so that's what makes them close in the comics was that connection. So they won't do that.
Although, ironically, speaking of alcoholism, and that was one of the things in here that I thought was really funny, but then again, somebody afterwards was like, oh, I don't like how they treated that. I'm like, ooh, that's true. Like, I love that they have now decided that Thor, instead of being like this, you know, stuffed shirt Shakespearean kind of god, is he's comic relief, right? And so he's very funny. They even made like a, you know, a Big Lebowski reference about him. I love Quark, by the way. Quark should just be in every Marvel movie. Like, he can't be in the whole thing, but Quark just has to show up because Quark, I think, is my favorite character now in the Marvel universe. But you know, so on the one hand, like Thor, it was sort of funny how they were treating him, but I'm like, but at the same time, this is also really serious. He does have like PTSD and has developed a drinking problem to deal with his guilt and PTSD, right? So it's sort of the whole like kind of like the beer gut too. I'm like, oh, we're playing the drinking problem and the fat stuff for jokes, which I get, and Hollywood has a long history of it, but it's also the sort of thing in 2019 where you're like, ooh.
Yeah, yeah, since Thor's one of my favorite characters, and I'm wearing a Thor t-shirt right now, that it bothered me. On one level, I like the analysis of Thor and Iron Man both went one-on-one with Thanos, both tried to kill Thanos, and Thor got the closest. And so Tony's reaction to failure was he gets married and starts a family and is living kind of a simple life. He still has some high-tech toys, but the house looks like a super nice mountain house.
Yes.
But it's also rustic at the same time.
He also, just interject, he also seems to be a little bit mad and seems to be blaming Cap, kind of saying, if you listened to me in the first place, we wouldn't have ended up here. So again, maybe projecting, instead of internalizing the guilt, he's like, I'm going to blame others, sort of thing, too.
There's that at play, definitely.
Yeah.
But there's his reaction of get away from everyone and starts a family.
Yes.
Thor's reaction, while he's saved a good chunk of his people, he was the last one that had the opportunity for the kill shot. He, you know, like, I don't blame Thor for not going for the head, because the head's just a small part of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Like police officers learn, shoot for the engine room, you know, like, mm-hmm. you shoot for the chest, and that's what he did. He doesn't, like, try doing a really difficult shot of, like, take off the arm from a distance, but because of that, you know, he has massive guilt, mm-hmm. because half the universe died because of, you know, his kill shot.
Right.
And I appreciate the depth of character they gave him for having that remorse and anger and guilt, but turning them into a giant couch potato with a drinking problem bothered me, because from Thor Ragnarok, having it's what heroes do and that arc, it seemed just, I didn't like it. I mean, I don't mind the idea of like constant guilt, but like raging alcoholic, memory problems, that it's an important topic to explore with a character, because there are real people who have those feelings because of horrible things that happen. But it's another thing to turn it into a joke. And that was something that just made me uncomfortable and was a tad out of character with the character. I mean, I could see him being alone, you know, and it just, you know, being standoffish. But after what we saw with his growth in Ragnarok, I see him throwing in the towel on life just really seems weird. But I did like Norway. And which, why don't we, that's a good legal issue, because what's the state of Asgard? Are they just a nice little town in Norway? Or did Norway give them that little town and they're a nation state? Like, what's their legal status? Because they clearly under the refugee treaty, they could be considered refugees because of the attempted genocide by Hela and Sulzer destroying Asgard. And they could be granted emergency refugee status. And if they wanted to come to America, I'm sure, you know, since they look Norwegian, they could get in. however, them going to Norway makes more sense because of their historical and ancestral connection.
Otherwise, my home state, Minnesota, also has a ton, you know, like we had the most Swedes outside of Sweden. So, and a ton of Norwegians too. So they could have come to Minnesota too.
That looked like a really nice, quaint fishing village.
All right, they should stay in Norway. That's true. Don't come to the U.S. right now. Go to Norway.
Not till at least January 2021. Things should be worked out by then.
Oh, Josh is more optimistic than I am.
I have faith. However, I kind of would enjoy New Asgard. I mean, I wouldn't get to wear shorts most likely, but just not knowing the weather. But, it, you know, it's close to getting up there.
Yeah.
That the boats looked fun. Let's go. I could do that. And they do have cable. So again, sounds pretty nice to me.
Well, it would be interesting if Norway did what we did here, and hopefully we do. Obviously here in the U.S. we have a really bad history with this, but you know, they do have, obviously some of the Native American tribes have reservations. I mean, obviously we have a shameful history with Native Americans and how they ended up on the reservations. But I'm saying, if you just look at the current state right now, where, you know, they could do this for this new Asgard too, where you do have certain sovereignty within that, right? But possibly, you know, like here, even the most sovereign Native American reservations, still ultimately like the FBI and the federal government has authority over them. So it could be something like that, like, okay, we're going to let you run. You get to kind of be, you know, your own little state or something, but ultimately you still answer to the Norwegian prime minister. I should know this. I'm guessing it's a prime minister.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I know, isn't that sad? I'm pretty sure it's a prime minister.
Yeah, I knew at one point.
I know the Swedes actually still have a royal family, but I don't think Norway does.
I remember from law school with the Worcester decision that Native American tribes were referred to as dependent sovereign nations.
Ooh.
And I would not be surprised if New Asgard could fall into that category, or if they just... It's like, hey, this part of Norway is super difficult to live in, super rugged, but you guys will be fine. So
yeah,
have at it, kids. How about this much land at work? Okay, we'll give you mail service will come as well. And maybe it's something like that. And they have a fishing-based economy. So
very healthy. As long as they're not hunting whales.
that would be a killjoy, but I doubt they would do that. That's
well, the Norwegians do. That's a whole thing. But yes, hopefully new Asgard doesn't.
I could just think of Valkyrie out there hunting whales, and
she actually could really well.
It's riding on a, you know, her Pegasus. That'd be lots of fun. But
well, I'd say another legal issue that I was thinking of that actually tied into one of my highlights, since I'd been such a bummer with the lowlights before. You know, we've talked before about Captain America, and you love Captain America long before I did. But Chris Evans, I mean, the way that the writers and the directors have handled him, and then I really think the way Chris Evans has handled him as an actor has been outstanding, and has managed to take somebody who really could be very boring and two-dimensional because he's just always the good guy, does the right thing, and make him really compelling to watch. Even my daughter was like, ooh, he is very compelling to watch. but you know, his whole storyline throughout this, I thought was so neat. I liked that. I mean, speaking of dealing with the grief, he was probably trying to deal with it in sort of the most healthy way, eh? Like, he was like, all right, we lost the battle. Now we're just going to have to deal with this. And he's there with like support groups trying to get people to move on. Although obviously he's never been able to move on from Peggy. But I thought he got to have maybe deal with the grief best. Maybe he's because he's had more experience dealing with grief for so long, but he's had that experience dealing with the grief. I thought he did that well. He also got some of the greatest lines. I mean, the whole jokes about his butt and then him agreeing that that is America's butt. I thought that was, you know, very funny. Obviously the stuff with the hammer was fantastic. And then of course how he chose to end by going back to be with Peggy is, especially for those of us who have watched all these things and, you know, known that he's pined after her for through all these movies. And then, of course, her and, you know, watching her show, which was canceled too soon, but knowing that she'd always pined for him. All of that was just so great. So wonderful to see him, you know, dancing with her, which again, I was reading afterwards, like, oh, that has been a running thing, right? The references to the dance. So if I would have been smart, I would have known that it had would end with that. And even that song in particular apparently had callbacks to an earlier movie. But from a legal standpoint, I was like, so how does this work? Like, if he goes back in time, and we'll talk about this too, kind of in the modern day, but like, could he get a job? Social Security numbers had been around since, what, the 30s. You know, how does he get, does he like, no, I'm Steve Rogers, I'm back. Does he take on that persona? You know, given the fact that Peggy Carter has like real good spy government connections, do they just give him a new identity and a new Social Security number? But that was kind of my one question is, I'm like, how do you make money? Did you just be like, I'm going to invest in IBM and Microsoft and Apple and we'll be fine kind of thing? Because that was a thing too. I loved all the references to Back to the Future and making fun of their time travel rules. But I was thinking like, does Captain America, like, does he do that? Does he not bet on who's going to win the World Series in 1955? Or something? But like, if you don't have, you know, a social security number, maybe he has to do that stuff to be able to generate any income to support himself. Or maybe Peggy just took care of everything.
So I have, let's not think of Peggy as the sugar mom in this relationship, but mm-hmm. I had some problems with it because Agent Carter season 2 ends with Peggy looking like she's going off with Agent D'Souza.
True.
And that she made peace and she was moving on with her life with a guy who was legitimately a hero himself. And if Cap, you know, just walks in and is like, hey, drop that zero and get with this hero, that's pretty crappy. And
I'm assuming they broke up. It turned out he wasn't as great as he seemed. He was really lazy and didn't help out around the house. So she's like, you're out of here. And then Captain America showed up.
Yeah, I was chatting with my brother, and he said, like, well, maybe if he goes back and say, like, no, 1956, you know, like, he, you know, so that way he's not just 10 years older than her all of a sudden.
Yes.
Then, like, maybe he died. And it's like, well, that's also lame that I just, that bothered me because they closed her arc in a fitting way with Agent Carter on her life. When we see her in Winter Soldier on, you know, in the assisted care facility, you know,
yeah,
there's definitely family photos up. So it looked like she had married and had kids. And that just, That bothered me. Now, I get
I assume those were nieces and nephews, I think, when I saw that. She struck me as a type who always would have worked and would have been a great aunt, but didn't have any kids of her own.
Yeah, I got the impression she married and had kids of her own. Because there was even a theory that, you know, Peggy was Coulson's mother. And
ooh, that's a cool theory.
So it kind of rubbed me wrong. Now, on the flip side, he might have gone back to, you know, 56, let's just say 55, 56, sees her, they have the dance, and maybe she is married, and like that's the, you know, the little goodbye moment that they have.
And it's like Castaway with Helen Hunt and Tom Hanks, where they don't get to end up together because she had moved on.
Yeah, and that would be okay. And Cap goes on and has a life of his own. That could work. And he, like, he on one level say like, oh, this is, I'm completing the life I started. On the other level, it's like you built a life. Like abandoning it just irritated me. On the flip side, we could see a Disney Plus spinoff of Cap fighting communists in the 50s. They just have to back the money truck up to Chris Evans to get him on board for something like that.
I don't think that's going to happen. He has made it quite clear he is done.
Yeah.
I give him 5 or 10 years and he may be ready to come back.
Yeah, it's, give him time. He also seemed to have enjoyed it, so give him time. But how does he reestablish an identity? Well, if you're, you know, dating or courting, you know, the super spy of the 1950s, they could take care of that. And also, I think
you've got several passports for you, several IDs. Yeah.
I also think post World War II, given refugees coming over, they could make it something work, and a different identity, and he could have had a, you know, just a life. But again, that means he's sitting out, just living his best life throughout the civil rights movement and all the other challenges that happened in the 70 years that he was on ice.
Ooh, interesting.
It's like, so you go back to white bread America and it's like, so what are you going to do during Brown v. Board? What are you going to do during school busing? What are you going to
do when you know Kennedy's about to be assassinated or Martin Luther King's about to be assassinated?
You're just going to sit it out and, you know, enjoy 70 years of having picnics.
If technically he believes that he can't interfere with the past, but he did by saying back there, ooh, that is a whole thing. I just kept thinking, I'm like, can you really go back to the 1950s? Like, I mean, obviously we have a messed up world now, but giving up internet and, like, you know, streaming TV. That would be very hard.
Medical care. I'm like, there's just, so again, I get, it's a nice sunset for them to have for Steve Rogers, that he went to the time period he felt he could fit in. But I do get this feeling of abandonment from it. But in the comics, you know, there's a storyline where Cap does end up being, you know, 95.
Right.
And you have, when Cap was dead, Bucky was Captain America and did a great job as Cap, and then you had a run with Sam as Cap, which was also a great run. Both are worthy, you know, successors of being the Sentinel of Liberty. I'm happy with either. So going with Sam worked for me because he represents a lot of what Steve represents, and in Steve doing, you know, the group recovery, that Sam was doing that with the vets in Winter Soldier. So, you know, like, I get that. And the comics, part of the reason why Bucky became Cap, it was part of his redemption arc that, you know, Steve put that into his will of, like, you know, save Bucky. And Tony Stark saw, like, okay, well, being Cap is one way to do that. And so it's an opportunity there. Whatever they do, I will be in the theater or on Disney Plus watching, because I love the characters. They have lots of options that they could do, and they clearly, you know, treat the subject matter with love and respect. There's just a few things that need some fine tuning. And
yeah, I mean, I'll definitely be there. I just had to say this whole Disney Plus thing. I will definitely be there for the movies. Whatever Marvel movie comes out, I will continue to see. I don't think, I'm like, there's too much other good TV on. I'm like, I don't think I can invest in Disney Plus too. And a bigger expansion of these. I don't know. It'd have to be something. Cause there's also that, what is it? There's something they're doing with Scarlet Witch and Vision, like in the 50s.
It's supposed to have like a 50s vibe of WandaVision. And so again, perk of a synthoid getting killed is you now have a bunch of smart people on planet Earth who've been brought back to life who can figure out, hey, we're in Wakanda. Let's see if we can jumpstart this bad boy. And if they're able to get him back, which clearly that's unless they're just doing sending false messages, promising TV shows that aren't going to come around, that's probably the most likely way to give him back. Throw in her hex powers, and you know, maybe that's another way that they could jumpstart him. But yeah, so the Marvel shows are the two that we mentioned. Supposed to be a Hawkeye one, right? with both Hawkeyes, with Renner mentoring Kate, and then Kate Bishop, and I don't think they've announced any castings for her. She was in the Young Avengers, the after Avengers disassembled. We have a bunch of young heroes who take up the mantles of those who aren't active anymore. So that could be cool with two archers running around. There's probably a fourth that I'm blanking on, but I think those are Loki. And
that's right.
Because the paradox of Loki grabbing the cosmic cube and disappearing.
That's the one thing that really confused me. So that basically totally screws up the past timeline, right? Because now everything that we saw about Loki by him grabbing, that was actually the one time travel paradox that I struggled the most with. Like, I'm like, I get that 2014 Gamora is going to be in 2023. That I can get. Like, you somehow jumped, you know, so, or the two nebulas even I get. But the Loki thing, I'm like, I really don't get, because that blows up the entire past timeline then, right?
It would create a parallel timeline where you have Loki running around.
Right.
And that's also pre-redeemed Loki.
Yeah.
So that's also problematic because he's fresh off of killing a bunch of people in Earth. So without him being in the Asgardian prison cell, affected by the death of his mother, going on the revenge mission with Thor, everything that happens in Thor Ragnarok, like that's all his redemptive arc. So we have schmuck Loki running around who hasn't had those experiences. So Tom Hiddleston is a great human being. I'm sure we're all going to be, you know, eating popcorn and having a rip-roaring good time watching him whenever he's on. But I'm curious to see where they go, because there's no redemption to him yet. So,
which is fun. I mean, bad Loki is more fun than good Loki. So
yeah, Loki always has a side of danger, but you know, the regret of over what he did to his own father. Like in Ragnarok, when Odin dies and Odin's talking to his sons, Loki's speechless.
Yeah.
Can't even muster anything to say to his own father because of how he feels. Because you can see the guilt on his face. That didn't happen to this Loki. So what are we going to get? But I digress. We'll see what happens when we start cranking out, I guess, four Marvel shows on Disney Plus.
Well, by the way, just a moment. I don't think we've ever discussed this, but speaking of Marvel shows, rest in peace. I guess this is part of the plan or something, but Netflix and losing all those Marvel shows, right? Jessica Jones, Luke Cage. There was, what was the other one?
Iron Fist, Punisher, Technical Defenders.
A lot of them.
I wouldn't be surprised if they come back in Disney Plus. Because, I mean, it makes sense for Netflix to say, we're not going to market you know, material from a competing company now. So like, I get it. It sucks. And
but it basically is a Netflix versus Disney world at this point in Hollywood. I mean, Amazon's trying to get in there, Apple's trying to get in there, but right now it really is Netflix versus Disney.
Yeah, and just to think of, you know, what, a decade ago when, you know, decade plus of Netflix being on death's door with their mail delivery services, and now they rule the world with the business model that they have. That is entertaining.
It is, although just on the day we are filming this, we are less than 24 hours out from the notice that they canceled Santa Clarita Diet, and I really am bummed about that. I was late to that because I don't like zombie things, but I just totally unrelated to all this, and we need to get to like kind of the big fascinating legal quandary that was raised in the Avengers, but I'm really bummed about that cancellation.
It's a, go have a brain smoothie. You'll feel better. Yeah. It's
I'm now late, but I'm now a Timothy Oliphant fan. Like, I now get why everyone loves him. He is awesome.
I support your life choices. But
anyway, so the thing from a legal standpoint, I mean, the thing that struck, and I'm sure it had to strike other people too, it, you know, and it's not just legal, it's just functional. We've seen it, like, there's actually been, like, well, The Leftovers kind of dealt with this same issue. Designated Survivor sort of dealt with, like, the government part of this issue. But what do you do when, you know, half the world, which means half of the people who deliver pizzas, who run Facebook, who run the government, who make sure that, you know, we get our gasoline to our cars, half of those, you know, people who teach our kids, I refuse to even think about that. You know, what do you do when all of that is gone? How does a society function? And that's obviously one thing that I felt like we kind of got mixed messages on in this show, right? On the one hand, it looked like it was going to be post-apocalyptic. On the other hand, it's safe enough that they can sit around and talk about dating and having, like, you know, support groups.
I was fascinated by that because when I got into the probate issue, one question I had was death proportional just across the board, or was it disproportional? And it looks like it was disproportional because New York is empty. Like, the lights aren't on. It looks deserted vessels all moored around Ellis Island. It's dark. San Francisco, you know, you have that street where Cassie Lang lives that
right.
Cars are just stopped. They just gave up. And it looks like we didn't get Mad Max. We don't have death gangs roaming around. We have an entire traumatized population. And there's the issue of who died. If everyone, it's like, okay, New York's emptied out. Is Chicago intact?
Right.
It's like, or people going like, hey, where's Lenny? Like, he was here a minute ago. Is it that, as opposed to San Francisco with like, oh, it's empty. What the hell just happened here? Like, there's, you know, a couple dozen people left. But on the flip side, they did build a monument to those who had vanished. So again, there's some functionality.
Well, even the fact that they actually managed to haul the PIM van to a junkyard, and then there's actually somebody who's still working there at the junkyard. I'm like, out of all the things that have to, like, be running to keep a society together, I'm like, I would think that would be one of the employment jobs. I'm like, put him in construction, or yeah, like cleaning up all those cars. So like, no, we're still going to make sure that the junkyard is staffed. I thought that was kind of actually a funny kind of disconnect.
Yeah, that might have been his job before it all happened. He's just, well, this is what I know.
And, I know.
But, you know, it's like, it could be catastrophic if it's like, okay, so all the heart surgeons are gone.
Yes.
Everyone who knows how to take care of a nuclear reactor is gone. Oh, all the pilots are gone too. And the trash guys. So we're screwed. Hey, we still got running water, but we have no waste management at this time.
But our junkyards are secured.
Yeah, that's, on the flip side, Tokyo had the lights on.
Yeah.
So granted, I don't know if that was because, you know, the Yakuza was running the show, but the lights were still on in Tokyo, and we have lots of Yakuza bodies, so I don't know what was left other than that. But that's a very big mixed message of, are there other cities intact? And like, like, is Bogota, Colombia, like, two people disappeared and that was it.
Right.
or like we have, hey, all the Eskimos are fine. You know, it could be something weird like that. Or is everyone in Canada dead?
Yeah.
It's like Canada's gone. I mean, the landmass is still there, but they're all gone. Like, or there's one dude in Ottawa hanging out, you know, just trying to not freeze to death in winter. Or it's like, oh, Rochester's gone.
Well, given the fact that Hawkeye lost his entire family, you're like, all right, that already seems disproportionate, even at the family level or the individual level. Meanwhile, Tony Stark apparently doesn't lose anyone.
Two people, you know.
Yes, but he doesn't lose them. And I think Pepper Potts was supposed to be pregnant at the end of the last one, right? Isn't that implied?
He dreamed about having a child.
Oh,
and they were getting married. So Tony clearly wanted to have a kid.
Yeah.
And came back motivated because of the trauma that he endured.
Yeah.
He wanted to hold on to normal. And that's a perfectly human thing to do. But
speaking of the Vanished, and that was kind of the interesting thing, and that's what I was thinking of. And of course, Scott Lang found his name on there. So, you know, one of the big things, assuming that there is some sort of functioning government and that there is some way of like, okay, we're still going to maintain kind of the orderly distribution. There's still private property. There's still laws, all of that. One of my thoughts too was, all right, how do you do this? How do you, because these people just vanished, some of them may have vanished in front of other people. So at least you could then have an affidavit saying, I saw so-and-so Nick Fury vanish in front of my eyes. As opposed to others who were at home watching TV when they vanished or stuck in the quantum realm or whatever, you know, because normally there's a presumption. The Social Security Administration has this, and it's at common law, and I think all states, probably Nashville was one of the last states to adopt this, that if someone's been missing for 7 years, they can be presumed dead. But because really these people are missing, which is even reflected in the title of the memorial, The Vanished. So absent that, absent a body, the burden is normally on like the person wanting someone to be declared dead, and it can vary from state to state how you do this to prove that they're dead. Assuming that all insurance companies haven't been wiped out, I'm thinking they're going to, you know, since that's all the 7 years have not elapsed yet, I'm wondering if any of those insurance companies paid out life insurance policies, to any of the remaining beneficiaries or heirs.
It would fight like hell to not do
yes.
it. Because there's no way that even if you figure out the population of the United States that died, let's just say 100 million people in the U.S. are gone. And let's just say that out of those, 20 million of them had $100,000 life insurance policies. That would crush the insurance industry. They couldn't pay out that number of lost individuals.
No, and they're super rich. But yeah, that may be too much for them. And the actuarial charts had not anticipated Thanos.
I would be curious to see what we had during the Cold War when we had fear of a nuclear war. Did we have exclusions for that in the event of San Francisco takes a Russian ICBM and the city's gone, were there exclusions to things of that nature? And I don't do insurance coverage, and I could be fun to dig into that to see if there's an exclusion there.
Well, actually, I happen to have an insurance expert within my immediate realm. My boyfriend is an underwriter, so we actually spend a lot of time talking insurance because as a lawyer, it's actually very relevant. And I happen to know that there is actually, it's not an exclusion, there is actually a government act that provides that if an act is declared an act of terrorism, then the government basically acts as a backstop for the insurance companies so that the insurance companies don't need to pay out certain types of damage. And I'm sure there's more nuance to it than this, but certain, I don't know, general liability, life insurance, whatever. The insurance companies don't have to pay. So the fight always is there's, you know, often a fight with the government. Insurance companies are like, this is an act of terrorism. And the government's like, no, it's not. Because it's basically going to foot the bill. But I would think this could arguably fall under that. That it is basically And I'm sure terrorism is defined in the statute, but there is, at least in the U.S. government, and I'm assuming, especially post 9/11, that most insurance companies that operate around the world have similar exclusions or similar government coverage for that. And yes, I bet we've never talked about it specific, but when an act of war has been declared and there's been acts related to that, I'm sure insurance companies are very good at protecting their money, and insurance companies have a lot of sway with governments. So I am sure that they have got those kind of things covered, and they would argue that Thanos' snap is either an act of war or an act of terrorism, and they probably should not have to pay.
Yeah, and I could see survivor benefits being paid out by the government, because that's what we might need to do for to keep the lights on, that things could be so catastrophic that we would be in a brand new world of how do we keep civil society together.
And universal living wage would work then. There'd be less people. Maybe a couple of the billionaires would have died. You could just use their money for a universal living wage.
Yeah, something like that could happen. But on one level, it's refreshing to see a movie that has mass devastation and the world doesn't fall apart, that people keep trucking along. Now, granted, it's not how it was, and everyone's still freaked out and horrified. So, again, because we're human. But on the flip side, we don't have biker gangs going around committing mass murder. So, yay. And if that's because of Black Widow calling shots, cool. And maybe, I don't know what the next season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will bring, but they might fill in the gap. You know, that season could be based, you know, in the 5-year period, maybe year 2 or 3, of how they're keeping civil society civil, or could be something else entirely. I don't know. But there are some storytelling options there.
There are. Hey, that made me think of one other thing really quickly that I was going to ask you about, that the audience went nuts for. Again, when Captain America is back in 2011, 2012 Avengers World, right? The first Avengers, and he's in the elevator and they don't want to give him the briefcase. And he says, Hail Hydra. Everybody went nuts, of course, because was that Civil War, Age of Ultron?
Winter Soldier,
that we find that out. But was that also supposed to be a reference fan service to the period in the comic books where Captain America briefly was part of Hydra and all the fans got really mad?
I don't think so.
It was more the movie reference.
It was more the movie reference because Gary Shandling's character, who was a U.S. senator,
R.I.P.
I know, I miss him too. Now leans in for a hug towards Sitwell and says, "Hail Hydra!"
Right.
And so that is a Sabolith for Hydra operatives. Glad it worked.
Yeah.
And because I thought they were setting up, you know, the elevator fight scene that
yes.
they had in Winter Soldier, because it's like it's almost all the same guys.
Yes.
And it's like, is he going to fight his way out, or is he just going to... So he had to go with that plan, and that worked. That was nice fan service. But going back to Are They Dead, I could see no one knows for sure, because of the scale that had happened, the fact it was planet-wide, the fact it included animals, like that's not good, because if it took out half the plankton, we're screwed there as well. So it's because that's the baseline of the food chain. So all bad. But if they're just declared missing and the government stipends paid out to help keep things civil, and just from the way Cassie Street looked and the way New York looked, it appeared that society didn't probate anything, that they just tried to shuffle along and left things where they fell. It's like it looked like the garbage men disappeared. And where were Cassie's mom and stepdad? Did they disappear? So,
oh God, I didn't even think about that. That would have been awful if children were left to raise themselves. Oh God, that can go really dark. We do not need to see that 5-year period. I do not like post-apocalyptic things, and oh, that could be so dark.
On the flip side, but if they disappeared, maybe, or one of them disappeared, shared, because she would have been a ward of the state at that point. We wouldn't just leave gangs of children roaming the streets.
Except that, again, depending on who was killed, there may, I mean, this again, and that's one of the things, is that there seemed to be an implication that there was still some sort of functioning government at some level. Although, again, like my thought to post second snap, post Tony Stark snap, no, it would have been post
Hulk snap.
When Spider-Man goes back to school and all of a sudden the school is fine, everyone's right back in school. I'm like, did they just, as soon as everyone showed back up, they're like, all right, school starts tomorrow? Or was there like a recovery time? Because that was one of the things, too, I thought about. I'm like, were all these kids, and also, quite frankly, his buddy would have been 5 years older, right? In theory, if you were a teenager who came back after 5 years, all your friends would actually be 5 years older than you. They seem to ignore that.
Unless they all died in the snap.
And I say all died. So that's a whole weird, ooh. I'm like, look, I'm going through it right now. Middle school and high school are already dramatic enough. We don't need to add that layer on.
Yeah, so the 15-year-old who was dating another 15-year-old, yeah, post-second snap, it's like, oh, I'm 20 and you're 15. This is so over. It's not funny.
I know. Or the bully comes, stayed. And, oh, there's all kinds of levels there. Okay.
Birthdays also get weird because, yeah, if you were gone for 5 years and then come back, it's like, hey, I'm still 29. I'm not 34, but mathematically I'm 34.
Yeah, how does Social Security deal with that? Do you get to drink if you come back and you're 16, but according to your birth certificate, you're 21?
Yeah, that's a mess. They might go physical age, not mathematical age at that point. It's,
holy cow.
It would get so messy. On one level, I'm glad they didn't just restore the timeline of,
yes,
Thanos' first snap, because everything that was learned by characters in that five-year period would then be lost.
Right.
And while suffering is a horrible thing, people learn from it. And to go like, oh, let's just pretend that didn't happen. It's like, so everyone who got married and had kids, all that just gets wiped out of existence. On the flip side, if somebody got married and then vanished spouse reappears, that's awkward because,
yes,
it's like, so which marriage was invalidated? Because death ends a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a situation of somebody coming back from the dead and thus the marriage getting restored. And if somebody's married and they try to marry another person, that second marriage is not valid. So what the hell happens in that situation? Because the law's not designed for people to disappear, turn to ash, and then come back.
Yeah.
It would
be a mess if they had distributed property, if homes had been sold, any of that. Yeah, because, you know, and again, if they have been declared dead, and I've talked about this before, I think in the context of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but, you know, if you are actually declared dead, it is often very hard under the legal system to come back to life. Now, presumably because it was at such a massive scale, there would be special procedures both to declare people dead or vanished in the first place and then to declare them alive again. But it creates a host of problems. So they kind of, you know, Hollywood magic, you sort of gloss over it, you pick and choose the sad parts and the happy parts you want, but it would create a gigantic legal mess. There'd be a whole new area of law for lawyers to practice.
And agreed. One thing that could happen is because the event was planet universal, so there isn't anyone on Earth who isn't affected by it, people might actually be really understanding and come up with, it's either a giant mulligan and everyone just treats it as such, or good solutions are worked out. Kind of like, again, after, say, something like Pearl Harbor or 9/11, events that are horrible and traumatic generally bring out the best in people, at least I think so.
In the short term.
In the short term. That could play out with this. Everyone's ecstatic, fireworks shows going off, everyone's still alive. And for those who were left to be reunited with people, I would hope that goodwill would extend to, we're going to figure this out and not have protracted court battles and judges pulling out their hair with, we're not designed for this. That would be my guess. But again, it's radically weird and complicated.
It is. And that all being said, you know, I don't want to end on a bummer note. So I am glad the snap, Tony Stark getting to basically end the movie with how I believe he basically ended the first Iron Man, right? With I am Iron Man, is a very nice bookend. I was a little bit annoyed, you know, the kids and I, even though it had been 3 hours and we really could have used a bathroom break, we sat through all the credits, saw the nice pictures of all the Avengers. That was nice. And then at the end, we thought we heard some noise and we're like, what's this noise? And of course, I had to go read a Vanity Fair article to explain to me what that noise was. Did you know what the noise was, Josh?
No.
It is actually the clanging of Tony Stark as he's building his first Iron Man suit.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I actually had to go to Vanity Fair. One of my favorite writers is there. She covers a lot of geek stuff. Joanne Robinson, from Avengers stuff to Star Wars stuff to Game of Thrones, which I'm a late joiner of that fan club. But she explained that. She also explained who the teen was. Did you notice the teen boy at Tony Stark's funeral?
Yeah, my buddy Jerry Ann O'Brien and I said, who is that? And whether I don't know if it was the kid from Iron Man 2 or somebody else.
No, it was. Was it Iron Man 2 or 3?
2 was the little kid.
Oh, okay. That in the garage, right?
Oh, the garage was 3.
Okay, it's that boy. It was the boy who helped him in the garage in Iron Man 3.
Okay. Well, that's sweet. I was wondering if it was the kid from Iron Man 2 wearing the Iron Man mask.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a boy who helped him. So I thought, I did think, again, that they did a great job. I mean, to even say Rene Russo, to see, like, 1 second of Natalie Portman was really actually kind of funny.
Yeah. Portman had no lines, but I really loved Renee Russo going full mom because yes. She does that so well. I remember movies with her, just her being smoking hot to
like, A Thomas Crown Affair.
Yeah, to then pivot in the other direction of like, I really like her as a mom.
Women can be both.
Yes, they can. But it's just, again, having someone who lost a mom, the idea of like, oh, yeah. Wow, seeing Thor talk to his mom.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that a lot. And her reactions were like, kind of like, what happened to you? Eat a salad. You know, like that was, and like noticing his eye, which again, it's like, oh, I lost it from hell. It's like, he doesn't spill the beans. But I really loved Russo's role as Freya.
I did too. And actually, again, it's funny because they had talked about Back to the Future quite a bit. Her not wanting to know, like she could tell, I mean, he wanted to tell her something, right, about her impending death. Again, that was to me a big Back to the Future shout out. And no, I don't want to know. And of course, she basically said she's a witch. She probably already knew anyway. So, but I thought that was really neat. But I did love the poking fun of, you know, Hollywood movies and how they deal with time travel. So even as, you know, Tony Stark's just like, it's an inverse Mobius strip. That's all you need, you know.
Yes, and Paul Rudd listing off all of the like different time travel shows.
Yes,
it was he and War Machine, I think, who were going back and forth. It's like, I loved Quantum Leap. What a nice reference! And
I know, because to me, Quantum Leap's the only one that even has. I'm like, because I thought that when I first learned about quantum physics, I'm like, it does seem like Quantum Leaps would be the place where you could maybe do time travel. By the way, and this is not me. This is on one of my podcasts pointed out that it's also a really neat trick of just Paul Rudd and his real life superhero power that, you know, he actually was the only one who would not have aged 5 years because he was in the quantum realm that whole time. And he's actually the one who does not ever appear to age. So that actually works really well.
Boy, howdy. Yeah. It's a good film. I will see what the future brings. You know, my brother and I were discussing this last night of, what's the next team look like? Because, like, who are the actors that have good chemistry together? And, okay, Winter Soldier, Falcon, good buddy cop situation right there.
Captain Marvel and Thor. buddies. I think, well, Captain Marvel, actually, Thor and Tessa Thompson. I mean, that's the next one. Men in Black. I can't wait to see the two of them together. I love those two together.
Agreed. So, but like focusing on this, it's like, okay, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, like who do we have that, you know, will have that good chemistry? Because it's like we were surprised with like how well Thor and Rocket Raccoon interacted together. That was one of my favorite parts of Infinity War, and Rocket being able to talk to Thor unlike anybody else. So I don't know what the next Avengers will bring us chemistry-wise.
Yeah. I think it's exciting. I think it's neat that they're going off in different ways. I'm excited about Angelina Jolie entering the Marvel Universe. So they're going to do a lot of neat, exciting things come up. I mean, right now, I'm just very excited for the next Black Panther. That is still my absolute favorite. And so I want to see that expand. Hopefully now, it would be neat to have, again, we don't need all the Avengers, but hopefully in the second Black Panther, they may have cameos or some interactions with some of the other Avengers, new or old, who are still around. That could be fun. So that's, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
There are some characters who lend themselves well to appearing in other media. So such as Hulk is great in other movies. It's hard to pull off a successful Hulk movie, but Hulk and Thor worked fantastic.
Yes.
So maybe it's something along those lines. Or, again, looking at the next lineup, I don't know how Eternals will play out. And I've always had mixed feelings about those comic characters. Not bad, but it's just different. And also not necessarily the stuff that I gravitate towards. So I don't know what phase four will bring for me. I mean, I look forward to the next Doctor Strange, one of my favorite characters. I would love it. Apparently there's been a Thor 4 pitch.
Yes.
And I again, we need to see Thor get back into shape, deal with the alcoholism and get positive. And, so again, lots of options, and we know that they love the fans, they love the material, and my question is, what will the Black Widow movie be? Will it be like a spy movie in the 90s? Will we see Budapest? Like, what, how are they going to do? Because resurrecting her might be a cheat.
Yeah.
And also defeat the purpose of the snap couldn't bring her back.
Right.
You know, like Cap dropping off the Soul Stone didn't cause her to pop out.
Right.
It was a soul for a soul. So unless she's in the soul gym and somehow gets out.
Well, I don't know. It is exciting to see what's going to come next. But right now, I have to say, even with my little critiques, I enjoyed the movie a lot. The kids and I will be going back to see it again. I think they did some excellent fan service. And yeah, it was a very enjoyable movie.
Yes, and it was a nice curtain call for everyone, basically everyone who's ever been in a Marvel movie, that they worked in everybody. So that was pretty sweet.
Next one, I guess this summer, will be the new Spider-Man. And I do love Tom Holland as Spider-Man, so my daughter and I will be there this summer.
It looks fun. And you know, like with the first Spider-Man movie, I left feeling, oh, I know this feeling. It's joy. More of that, please. So
yes.
It's okay. Joy is good. So, well, and I do love Torme as Aunt May. So
yeah, Marissa's awesome, and Zendaya. Anything with Zendaya.
Lots of cool options. So with that, everyone, thank you for tuning in. We're definitely going to wait a couple days before posting this because we believe in not ruining the movie for anyone. And until next time,
they were warned.
Stay geeky, America.